Hello, everybody out there. Here's Guillermo and I'm Carla.
This is our new podcast where you'll meet the Trickshot mindset from the inside visionaries.
Buckle up and enjoy. Academy Awards, episode one.
So there is been a lot of speculation regarding this year's ceremony. Some people say that the menu wasn't accurate, that the magic has been lost, that a lot of the films weren't worthy, but maybe that's just me. I think the thing that disturbed me the most was the weird order they decided this year to, you know, give away the winners.
Yeah, which ones did they start with?
I think they start for like best adapted screenplay, which is like in the middle of it.
Usually, yeah, it's kind of, I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure Aaron Sorkin is like busting everybody's balls in Hollywood right now.
It's just a mess.
I think in this podcast, we're just going to basically talk about the winners in the traditional order. So like, for best sound, Sound of Metal.
Yeah, for sure. That one for me, I was very happy about that winner. I really liked that movie. I think it was a very good, based on even previous qualifications to win an award, it really is a good example of a good winner. For those who haven't seen The Sound of Metal, it's about a man who is traveling, doing a tour with his girlfriend, and he is a metal drummer in a band with her, and she's the singer, and he basically starts losing his hearing, and it's actually very dramatic and very painful to watch. You actually can hear what he hears. I don't know if I should spoiler alert. I don't know if I should say too much, but it is really a very interesting story.
Just so for you guys know, the reason why Carla loved it so much is because as a storyteller, she thought that a struggle was real, and you know it from the first 10 minutes and dive into the film.
I do want to mention that the actors in The Sound of Metal were really great. I've seen them in series like Bates Motel, and I think there was another one that at least the main actress was in. But I don't remember. Do you remember any movies that the other actors were in?
I don't. However, I do know that the teacher who teach the protagonist how to, you know, live the life that he's giving now, he's actually deaf. And he's like one of the best examples of Hollywood actors who are deaf.
Who are deaf and who, like, even though that they have this struggle, this kind of handicap, they are able to function like everybody else and surpass that kind of, or persevere through a world that seemingly can be against them.
There's one thing I want to tell you guys. So I know the production design is very important. It's everything that is inside of the frame, you know, being able to do the research about the antics that needs to be set for the period time. There is this confusion though, that people think that production design also includes wardrobe, which is not, except for watches. That's the only thing that production design department takes care of. Anything else that an actor is not wearing on is placed by the production designer. And it's a very, very underrated position. And this year, the best production design was given to Mank. The film is a film noir tribute to the golden era of Hollywood during the 20s and the 60s by the writer Mank, who wrote Citizen Kane, directed by Orson Welles. His breakthrough into the cinemas we know him nowadays. So this is the thing. The production design is amazing. You really feel like you're in that era of glamour and avant-garde and all that stuff. However, the movie sucked. I don't know how Fincher could have created that. I've been always being a sucker for Fincher. Particularly my favorite film is The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, who he did a great job, and Seven, and you know, all those classics. How could we forget Fight Club? But the production design of that film, I think it was like pretentious to the point of like, you know, the only thing that really highlighted from the film was the production designs. The acting, Gary Oldman, God bless him. He's amazing. He did a great job. But the story was so long and so dull. I think that David Fincher was trying to do like a film noir in nowadays, but didn't really grasp the whole spectrum of the making of Citizen Kane. So the category that we're going to talk about now, and also brings me to one of my favorite films from this year, is Best Visual Effects, winner Tenet by Christopher Nolan. That movie blew my mind so much that I had to like rewatch it, and I still couldn't understand the timeline. Then I have to rewatch it while I was listening to a YouTube video. And then I had to talk to Carla to kind of see what's up. Guys, do not do what I did and go to the theater and watch this movie with a beer in your hand, because you're not going to get it. If you can't like even focus 100% on it, when you're sober, not unless when you're a bit tipsy.
Tenet is a completely 100% intellectual film. You have to think, you have to be engaged in this movie. It's just, there's a lot of things going on. There's playing with the speed, with the timelines, with the editing is the most amazing. It's definitely breaking barriers, surpassing a bunch of different norms in editing. And it blew my mind. When I was watching it, I could not take a moment to just look anywhere else because it was enthralling. And we have both talked to our mutual partner, Matt, about this movie, and he did not like it.
He didn't even finish it through.
He couldn't finish it. And it was, and we talked to him about it. We told him, you can't watch this movie like smoking weed or drinking. Like, you can't just, this is not a normal movie to just relax one day and just watch it. It's like intellectual. You gotta pay really close attention and you will get so much out of it. Like,
you were just mentioning the editing, and I know we both love Nolan, but you didn't know that Nolan doesn't allow their crew to like take a seat. There is no chairs on set. So I wonder if he did the same thing to the editor.
My God, I doubt it. No. There was way too... This took a long time. This took months to edit. This was not an easy feat. It was very calculated, everything. I think that if you really watch it, if any of you really, really watch this movie and really pay attention, you'll get a lot of points of inspiration to help you make something else. It doesn't have to be exactly the same. It's just very inspirational.
But the biggest question is, what do you think is actually the ending?
Yeah. Well, it's like one of those movies that you don't really know. It's up to the viewer, you know, like Inception.
We love you, Nolan, but sometimes you really messed us up. I'm going to skip through some of the nominees just because of the time, but I really wanted to talk about Best Adapted Screenplay by The Father. I know we were really confused by that film, even though Anthony Hopkins well-deserved nominees and winner eventually deserve it.
I feel like there needs to be more touched on the mental illness factor of this movie and movies like The Joker. This movie, it's mostly about like, how would it feel if you had Alzheimer's? How would it feel if you couldn't remember what your daughter looked like, where you lived, everything? Everything looks the same. Everything looks exactly the same, but the people don't look the same, or you don't know where you are. That one's also inspirational because it shows you how lost you can be. And we're all heading in that direction. Everybody. We're all going to get old. So
I'm going to freeze myself by the time I turn 60.
But okay.
That might just be me.
Eventually, after you defrost yourself.
They're going to come up with a solution to ageness.
All right.
So I'll be young, beautiful, and forever.
Sounds good.
So for Best Original Screenplay, honestly, to me, it's like, I don't know why, but I value way more, even though the adapted screenplay has its value. But when somebody comes with a story from scratch, not based on a book, not based on anything, I think that has like certain momentum and certain like authenticity. And I actually enjoy a lot this movie, even though I read some reviews about it. And me being a male, I felt really offended. But I said, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. And surprisingly, Promising a Young Woman was a very good film. I remember watching it with Carla too. And she being a female, if you guys don't know Carla, she's a female.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why it's with A, I guess. Well, I don't know.
God.
The final thing, spoiler alert, basically... I mean, Carla, don't you want to say what the film is about? Am I spoil the ending and the twisted part? And you say,
no,
and
we do not want to spoil the ending, but
let's just say it's the ending of the feminine movement.
Like we should say the ending. Okay, guys, stop listening now if you don't want to have this spoiler alert. But basically, in my opinion, the ending just killed the Me Too movement because it's just, you know, the whole like, oh, I'm going to avoid rape and all this stuff. And because the producers are getting in trouble if something happens. No.
She gets killed.
She gets killed.
She gets fucking killed, man. By the same guy who raped her friend.
Yep.
How savage is that? I remember looking at the long time, say it's just a movie. They're going to save her somehow. She's going to
kill
take
the guy.
Over.
Yeah. No, it's actually based on fucking reality, right? Because women are not stronger than men. Not physically.
Wow.
Not in that way.
I can't get banned because a girl say that I didn't. So.
I said it. So. Normally, a woman is not, I mean, socially acceptable.
You say it,
body
you
type
say it, you say it's done, it's printed, it's out. You say it.
Okay.
Whatever.
But usually women physically.
But then she did got her revenge. She fucked everybody else from the grave.
And then there's a twist. After that, after she dies, she did. It's a kind of cliche thing, but you haven't seen it in a really long time where, okay, if I don't come back, then release this. And it was released. And it's...
Say no to rape, guys. Say no to rape. That's not nice. That's not nice. It's not acceptable. Shame on you. So this is the thing I really, really, really want to talk about, which is best director.
Yeah.
So the nominees this year were The Trial of the Chicago, Sound of Metal, Promising Young Woman, Minari, Mank, Judas and the Black Messiah, The Father, and Nomadland.
Unfortunately, the best director went to Nomadland.
She's a sister, Carla. How dare you to say that just because she's a woman?
Was that political? Like, listen, yes, I am all for supporting women power and everything, but that movie was filmed like a bad documentary. And I love the main actress. She is one of my favorite actresses.
We love you, Frances. We love you. So, Chloe Zhao. Chloe Zhao has been working in the independent circus for a while now, but she finally came to like the big screen with Nomadland, which to me, it's not like it's a bad movie. It's just it seems like a remake of Into the Wild, just on the face of an old person.
Into the Wild was really good.
Into the Wild was really good. Because it makes sense to do that shit when you're young and wild, but not when you are in your 60s and you're like living out of Amazon factory.
I mean, I don't know. I just really didn't like... The biggest part that I didn't like about the movie was they shot parts of it like a documentary, like talking heads, but also the talking heads weren't really well done. It was like they were in a weird angle. And they had voiceover.
Well, a lot of the people on the news, they were actually nomad. Right. Like the old guy, that's what he does. Like the leader of the...
Right. But was the filmmaker a nomad? Was the filmmaker like an amateur?
Chloe Zhao, as we know, she's like one person's band where she directed, everything. She wrote it, she produced it, she edited it, she did everything because she doesn't need anybody else.
Did she work the camera?
Chloe Zhao did tell the cinematographer how to do the things. The problem is that, I mean, I know that you take more care of those details. To me, it's not even about that. It's the story in general. It just feels so slow and so repetitive. And the climax of it didn't really pay off. I felt like it was an endless story and everything just happened and happened and happened and keep happening, but nothing really happened. And I didn't see a character arc change on her.
No, I don't think she did change. She just kept doing the same thing. She had opportunities for change. She had opportunities to do what everybody else does. And she just showed that she has that fear, that she doesn't want to be that way. But she doesn't change. She doesn't go through like a resolution of, okay, you don't want to be this kind of person, but you can't continue in the same path that you're doing. There's no change. But also, I feel like the director spread herself too thin. She did too much. And that's why it didn't really work for me.
I mean, one thing that I do like about the nominees is that a lot of them were independent. And that means that Hollywood is open to independent market where they are not attached to the big budget agenda from big studios, which is fine.
Yeah. So there's hope. There's hope for independent filmmakers. And there's hope for women independent filmmakers who want to do everything.
Yeah. Well, just so you guys know, Chloe Zhao has been the first ever non-white female filmmaker to win Best Directing. The only other one?
Catherine Bigelow for Hurt Locker.
I really, really want to talk about the other nominee and Best Foreigner Film, which has been to me by far the best film of the year. Another round. Yes. By Thomas Vinterberg, one of the founders of Dogma 96, which broke all the rules in Denmark about cinema establishment. This film talks about a middle-aged teacher in Denmark who feels like his life has gone flat in a way. And he and his buddies, also teachers, decided to make an experiment. Then human beings, we actually are supposed to have a certain degree of alcohol in us in order to live a positive, successful life. They might take it too far, but the message behind it is that you should be yourself, even if that means then you are addicted to certain substances. You know, who doesn't like a beer at the end of the day?
It's a form of self-medication.
Carla dos candy.
Yes, I have a sweet tooth and I need it. Mads Mikkelsen was in Hannibal originally when I first saw him. And in this movie, he does really, really well.
His dancing, though. His dancing is amazing.
His dancing.
I thought that was a stunt, but then I realized it wasn't.
Was shocking. He is very multi-talented, that man.
Check it out in our round, guys. Honestly, I think that everything is just good about it. The soundtrack, the story, the cinematography, the acting, the struggle.
The struggle is real. It's also very, very much what everybody can deal with. But it's so entertaining, though.
I never seen an alcoholic film where it's so entertaining that it makes you want to drink again. Like, I recently quit drinking and now it makes me want to drink. I'm like, wow, that's why it makes me fall in love with it.
But also, it's kind of something you learn from because it's a whole experiment. It's an experiment about how much alcohol you can take to and how much alcohol you can keep in your system to stay in a stable way, but also functioning like at your highest, right? I think that people even talk about like how race car drivers, they would take a shot or a doctor would take a shot just before a surgery.
Artists too, before going to stage.
Exactly. So it's just like a self-medication just before doing something that's strenuous, that you need everything to work.
Yeah. What I think is one of the points the director was trying to do that is sometimes maybe underneath is the fact that how is different drinking certain amount of alcohol daily than people who drink Xanax or need Adderall to just keep working every day the same way. I think it's the whole hypocrisy that we take substances every day, guys. Coffee is a drug.
Sugar is a drug. Xanax is a drug.
Sex is a drug, but that's a healthy one because you do cardio.
So it's all about addictions also. Like if you're good and you don't get addicted to it, you don't take it too far, there's a balance to everything. So it's really good with that, I think. It even says like, you know, it touches a lot of the theme that children at a certain time, like as soon as they graduate high school, they have this whole celebration and everyone gets drunk and they're happy and everything. And even though they just went through this whole issue with alcohol, they're alcoholics or through school and all of this stuff, all of the red tape that school has in trying to like keep everyone safe and children and parents and teachers and all of that. And then at the end, they let kids drink as soon as they graduate. So it's the whole hypocrisy, but then it's very, very close to life, to what how life is really is.
Yeah.
And Denmark is supposed, like it's a whole other world from what you and I are used to, from Guillermo and Carla, we're used to. So it's very interesting to see that connection as well, that we're all connected.
Like, did you actually like the movie from 1 to 10?
I did. I really liked the movie.
But you like more the movie than we're going to talk about on Close the Episode with Sound of Metal.
Yes.
Carla's favorite. To me, it was a good film. Not to the level, but
I think that it definitely feeds into all of the criteria that the Oscars tend to look at, which is it something that's touching? Is it something that's a real struggle? Is it something that everybody can relate to? Everybody can possibly like pass through this. Like that's something that those are the patterns that I have seen in Oscar films, that something that is super relatable and a real struggle.
Well, guys, and don't get us wrong. We love the Oscars. We watch them every year, and Trickshot Productions' dream still being the first South Americans winning an Oscar. So stay tuned until that happens. Okay, so Carla, really intrigued by why was The Sound of Metal your favorite film of the year?
I mean, it's the soundtrack. It's the way they decided to portray what death actually sounds like. It's how the world of people who are death, how they don't see it as a handicap. They just see it as just another way to live. And then also how the protagonist, who is supposed to be, you know, usually the good guy, decides against what everybody thinks is the right thing, which is to just live with his deathness. Can't make that transition. He's going to keep following his dream, which also is another theme that is, you know.
And also you get to see like how the American system healthcare works.
Yes.
Then you do not get help at all.
You do not get help at all if you decide to see your handicap as a handicap. You have to see it as like, and okay, now this is your way of life. And we are going to help you live your way of life. That's it.
So basically, spoiler alert, what I really want to know, There's been a lot of speculation regarding that, but like the protagonist goes back to Paris where his girlfriend is at, and you know, he's there to try to like get her back after he got like a transplant that we know that doesn't really work 100%, but makes his life easier. Do you think they end up together?
Do I think they end up together?
Because all that we see in the final shot is him accepting and embracing his current situation in the crown and just stand up from the French and leaves.
From that editing, I don't think so.
Do you think it was up to him or up to her?
Both of them.
Do you think she decided to let him go just because he lost his hearing?
Not at all.
Oh, no?
No.
Why
so? It's not about the hearing.
That he stopped being himself?
Okay. So the backstory is that he is a drug addict and she signed up for that. Like, you know, she actually still dated him and helped him and got him through all of that. But now there's a new struggle, which is also like the hearing thing. But it's not just about him, okay? She also has her own life and maybe she sees that she can't be a traveling metal artist the rest of her life. Also, her parental influence in France, in Paris. Like, I don't think she knows what she wants. And I think that that affected the relationship because he 100% knew what he wanted. He wanted to be with her, but also in a codependent way because he felt like he needed her to help him with his addiction or whatever.
I don't think it was in a codependent way because if you noticed, he was the one who saved her at first. We don't see her like cutting her veins, but we see the scarf on her wrist.
Right.
So in a way, they save each other.
So it's codependent still. They save each other.
To me, that's more like supporting each other.
What kind of future could they have?
What kind of future do you think they will want from each other?
I think they just want to be together and love each other, but there's influences, which his influence are drugs. Her influences are her parents.
What happened with endings like The Graduate, where Dustin Hoffman takes the bride and say fuck off to everybody and take her to a bus? And they are happy. They look like they don't know what the fuck they did, but they look happy. So I refuse to believe influence. Do not let anybody influence you from who you love, guys. And what you love. Maybe that means making porn. People need it sometimes. One thing that I really want to mention though, my favorite part from the Oscars itself was when they were giving away the best supporting actress. And Jung Jung Jung, sorry for my pronunciation, from Minari, won best actress. And the one who giving away that Oscar was none other less but Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
Even I want Brad Pitt to give me the Oscar.
She was so happy.
She was so happy. I think she didn't care about the Oscar. She thought, oh, I get to be for 5 seconds with Brad Pitt. And you see her kind of like going away with him backstage. And she's like struggling. And I think she just pretended and she didn't know what she was doing. Just so Brad Pitt would hold her from the arm.
Maybe. It was great. It was great to watch. Great to watch. No, it was Brad Pitt and he presented her with the award and she just didn't even know where to go, what to do, nothing. She was just like, I am in a whole other world, but I am so happy.
I'm sure Ancala would have done the same even with 32 years old.
I would have probably done the same, yeah. Would have been like, I don't know what's going on. Where am I? What do I do? Thank you. Okay, Brad Pitt, I follow you.
All right, guys, that's it. Thank you so much. This is Guillermo Arcaya.
And this is Carla Pimentel.
Welcome to Trickshot
Podcast.